Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
The U.S. seeks Arab support in the fight against Islamic State militants. And the fight against Ebola gets a boost. I'm Joe Palca, reporting from Washington. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Saudi Arabia to seek Arab support for a coalition against Islamic State militants. Secretary Kerry arrived today in Jeddah, where he's scheduled to hold talks with officials from several key Arab nations in Turkey. This is Iraqi Deputy Prime Minister Hoshyar Zebari.
The announcement of the new strategy announced by President Obama last night, I think it's a wise and a bold strategy. It will help to push back, to defeat ISIS. It relies a great deal on the local forces on the ground, especially the Peshmerga, especially the certain units of the Iraqi security forces who are non-sectarian, and also to develop even further procedures.
President Obama said in his address last night that he would not hesitate to order airstrikes against Islamic State targets. The Oscar Pistorius trial was adjourned to Friday in South Africa after the judge absolved the star runner of all murder charges but indicated he could still be found guilty of homicide.
Viewed in its totality, the evidence failed to establish that the accused had the requisite intention to kill the deceased, let alone with premeditation.
Now, Judge Tozokil Masipa ended Thursday's proceedings abruptly without issuing a formal verdict for Pistorius, the Olympic sprinter known as the Blade Runner, who killed his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, at his home last year. Masipa said that prosecutors failed. Pistorius was guilty of premeditated murder. This is VOA News. The U.S.-based Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation says it is immediately committing $50 million to help combat the growing Ebola outbreak in West Africa. The foundation says it also will work with partners to speed up development of therapies, vaccines, and diagnostic tests to better treat and prevent transmission of the disease. NATO says about 1,000 Russian troops remain inside Ukraine a day after Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko reported that most of the Russian forces assisting separatists there had gone home. A ceasefire, however, is holding in Ukraine's eastern region. In this report from Washington, VOA senior correspondent Andre Dineshnera spoke with former U.S. Ambassador Jack Matlock, a longtime expert on Russia, about the situation in Ukraine.
Senior Russian officials, including Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, have recently stated there is no military intervention from Russia. But the last U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union, Jack Matlock, disagrees.
Obviously, they're intervening. I think they would say, look, you guys intervene wherever you want to. You even invade, like the United States invaded Iraq, which had not attacked it, and we're essentially using the same methods.
Some experts have indicated that Russian President Vladimir Putin wants more than just to gain influence in that region, that he eventually wants to annex eastern Ukraine.
I don't think there is an intent to take it into adding to Russia. It would be a totally irrational intent. This is an economically depressed area.
Andre Dineshnera, VOA News, Washington.
President Poroshenko said Wednesday 70% of the Russian troops in Ukraine had crossed back over the border. Thailand's government is denying allegations that people detained under martial law have been tortured, Steve Herman reports.
In a written response to the international human rights group Amnesty International, Thailand's junta says its internal investigation has found no evidence of alleged torture during the first 100 days of martial law, as alleged. Amnesty, along with a domestic organization, this week separately accused the military of abusing some of those who have been held under martial law. Rupert Abbott is the lead writer of the Amnesty report.
Those detained under martial law have referred to beatings, mock executions, attempted asphyxiation.
Thailand Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesman Sek Wanametti says all such allegations are taken seriously by government agencies, which refer them to the military junta. Steve Herman, Bangkok.
For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. President Obama is taking part in two somber ceremonies to mark the 13th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks on the U.S. Mr. Obama, accompanied by the First Lady and Vice President Joe Biden, led a moment of silence on the South Lawn of the White House. This is Joe Palca for VOA.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
That's President Barack Obama addressing the nation on an expanded campaign to degrade and destroy the terror group ISIS. Details coming up.
Also in the news, French President Francois Hollande heads to Iraq tomorrow to underscore his country's support in crushing the Islamic State.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Liberia, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the United States and its main Arab allies have agreed to a coordinated campaign against Islamic State militants. In a joint communique issued after meetings in Saudi Arabia today, America's regional allies promised to do their share in a comprehensive fight against ISIS and said they would join in the many aspects of a military campaign as appropriate. The qualified support followed Secretary of State John Kerry's meeting in Jeddah with officials from the Six Nation Gulf Cooperation Council. The nations agreed to stop the flow of foreign fighters through neighboring countries, counter financing of IS and other extremist groups, and help with humanitarian relief work. Kerry is touring the region to help build a coalition to counter Islamic State. A senior State Department official said that a coalition may need more military bases in the region and access to airspace to conduct strikes. President Obama said in an address last night that he would not hesitate to order airstrikes against Islamic State targets in Syria as part of an expanded campaign to degrade and destroy the terror group. Mr. Obama stressed the contributions of partners that are providing intelligence, humanitarian aid, and aircraft.
This is not our fight alone. American power can make a decisive difference, but we cannot do for Iraqis what they must do for themselves. Nor can we take the place of Arab partners in securing their region. And that's why I've insisted that additional U.S. action depended upon Iraqis forming an inclusive government, which they have now done in recent days. So tonight, with a new Iraqi government in place, and following consultations with allies abroad and Congress at home, I can announce that America will lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat.
Mr. Obama laid out a four-part strategy that includes going beyond last month's airstrikes to protect American interests in Iraq. He warned that those who threaten America will find no safe haven.
French President Francois Hollande heads to Iraq tomorrow to underscore his country's support in crushing the Islamic State as an international campaign against the brutal jihadist movement ramps up. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports that France also hosts a conference Monday to coordinate efforts to fight the militants.
In flying to Baghdad on Friday, President François Hollande is signaling his country's support not only for Iraq's new government, but also its fight against the Islamic State group that poses a growing threat in the Middle East and for the West. Hundreds of young recruits have left Europe and the United States to join the fighting. Some are now returning home. Wednesday, U.S. President Barack Obama announced a stepped-up campaign against the Islamic State, aimed to degrade and ultimately destroy the group. France says it will take part in an international coalition to do so if Iraq and the United Nations approve its actions. France is also supplying arms to Kurdish forces fighting the Islamic State, as well as humanitarian aid.
Et nous avons dit que, si nécessaire, nous participerons à telle ou telle action militaire.
In a speech Wednesday, French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius said Paris will participate in airstrikes against the Islamic State in Iraq if necessary. But while Mr. Obama says U.S. strikes could extend into Syria, Mr. Fabius made it clear that France's response there will take another form by supporting moderate Syrian rebels in their fight against the jihadists and the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad. France is already supplying the rebels with some weapons. The deputy director of the Paris-based Foundation for Strategic Research, Jean-François Daguzin, says despite the varying tactics, Paris and Washington share the same objective.
There is a small difference due to the position more radical of France about Syria. But globally, the goals are exactly the same. You see, we have to destroy and to destroy definitively the Islamic State.
President Hollande's trip comes amid a flurry of international action. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is also in the Middle East, where he met Thursday with Saudi and other Arab officials on ways to respond to the jihadist threat. And earlier this week, Britain announced it is shipping weapons to Kurdish fighters in Iraq. On Monday, Paris hosts an international conference to coordinate efforts in fighting the Islamic State. Iraq's President Fuad Masum and other regional leaders are expected to attend, along with U.S. and other Western representatives. It's unclear whether Iran will be invited. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Eleven minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Americans paused today to mark the 13th anniversary of the September 11th attacks at the hallowed site where the World Trade Center Twin Towers once stood. Family and friends read the names of the nearly 3,000 people killed in New York at the Pentagon and near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Mr. Obama and the First Lady led a moment of silence on the South Lawn of the White House to coincide with the time at which the first hijacked plane crashed in New York. The Obamas also attended a ceremony at the Pentagon, the U.S. military headquarters where hundreds were killed after a third hijacked jetliner crashed into the complex.
A South African judge has begun a lengthy and dramatic ruling over the fate of running Oscar Pistorius for shooting his girlfriend at his home last year. The hotly anticipated verdict follows a lengthy criminal court. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the court in Pretoria, South Africa.
Judge Thokozile Masipa stopped abruptly and inexplicably short Thursday, just moments before she was expected to rule on Oscar Pistorius's fate. In the hours before, she had systematically laid out the case against him for shooting dead his girlfriend last year, stripping away inessential details and essentially dismissing the graver murder charges against him. As she began the final option, the lesser charge of culpable homicide, she stopped.
I am of the view that the accused acted too hastily and used excessive force. It is clear that his conduct was negligent.
Then she said, I will have to stop there. The verdict will not be official until she formally pronounces it Friday, with Pistorius standing to hear it. The sudden stop is a fitting twist for a trial that has had more than its share of drama. 41 days of emotional testimony, mind-numbingly detailed technical evidence, and several buckets worth of tears from Pistorius. Pistorius rose to fame in 2012 for being the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics, but landed himself in the spotlight again after he killed his girlfriend at his home in Pretoria in early 2013. He says he mistook his girlfriend of 3 months, model Reba Steenkamp, for an intruder. The prosecution argued he meant to kill her, an argument that, ultimately, fell flat for Masipa.
The state clearly has not proved beyond reasonable doubt that the accused is guilty of premeditated murder. There are just not enough facts to support such a finding.
That was part of an hours-long legal analysis, read in Masipa's even-keeled style. It was by far the most she has spoken during this entire trial, which has been dominated by the almost theatrical legal posturing by prosecutor Harry Nell and Pistorius's defender, Barry Rue. Pistorius, in contrast to Masipa, was openly emotional for much of the proceedings Thursday. He sat stoically as Masipa began her account of the events of that night. But his shoulders began to droop as she spoke of Steenkamp's fatal injuries, and he began to weep. He continued to cry as she winnowed down both sides' arguments, cutting to what she said was the heart of this case.
The issues are limited to whether, at the time the accused shot and killed the deceased, he had the requisite intention, and if so, whether there was any premeditation.
She also gave a nod to one element that made this case so unusual. It is the first major South African criminal trial to be televised live and has gathered massive interest worldwide for its potent mix of sex, celebrity, sports, and death.
I continue to explain why most witnesses got their facts wrong. The fact that this case attracted much media attention, especially soon after the incident, and the fact that it became a topic in many homes also did not assist. Almost every witness who was asked under cross-examination if he or she had followed the news relating to the events of 14 February 2013, or the bail proceedings, or the trial proceedings, responded positively.
The judge will finish reading her verdict on Friday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Pretoria, South Africa.
16 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation says it's committing $50 million to fight the West Africa Ebola outbreak. The funds will be distributed to UN agencies, NGOs, and governments. Chris Elias is president of global development for the Gates Foundation. From Seattle, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about the scale of the Ebola epidemic.
The scope of the current Ebola epidemic is unprecedented. You know, we've had multiple outbreaks of Ebola since it was first identified in 1976, and while they've been had very high fatality rates, the numbers of people affected have been relatively low, and the outbreaks have been in relatively isolated rural communities. What's unique about this epidemic is that it's spread very quickly and very far. And so this is really an unprecedented scope and pace of outbreak, which is one of the reasons that we're making this type of contribution of $50 million to the Ebola response. This is the largest grant that we've ever made for a humanitarian crisis. We've responded to many other crises over the years, but nothing at this level of magnitude. And it reflects our recognition that this is the most serious and fast-moving epidemic of Ebola that the continent has seen.
Why make the decision now? Are you seeing something very alarming that you felt it was very important to step in at this moment to try to stem things?
We made our first investment in the Ebola response about 2 months ago in mid-July when we provided $1 million to UNICEF for their regional response in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. And at that time, you know, we thought it would be a more contained epidemic. But then really over the last 2 weeks, we started to hear from our partners in the UN system, as well as the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, that this epidemic was starting to spread and move at a pace that we hadn't seen before. So we spent the last week assessing that, decided that this was a fast-moving epidemic and it was threatening a lot of other development gains in Africa, and that we wanted to participate in the response along with everyone else.
So explain how the $50 million will be used.
One of the unique advantages of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is that we have significant flexibility and we can be nimble to apply our resources to complement others. So the first set of investments that we have already made, over $10 million, is to support the UN system and the CDC, those groups that are working closely with the governments in the affected countries to fuel the acute response to stopping the epidemic. A second wave of investments, which we'll make, I suspect, in the next week or so, will be driven at the country level to understand what the needs are and how our flexible funding could best be used. And also, and this is a good example of that type of investment, which we're already very engaged in, is in Nigeria. You know, in Nigeria, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been working closely with the government of Nigeria for a long time on a range of issues, including the polio eradication effort. Because of the polio eradication collaboration, we have been supporting a number of emergency operation centers to strengthen the government of Nigeria's response to polio. When they had the small outbreak of Ebola in Lagos a month or so ago, we were able to very quickly repurpose some of our resources and staff that were already in country to help support the government of Nigeria in putting together the emergency response center in Lagos for Ebola. We did that in conjunction with the Aliko Dangote Foundation, a private foundation in Nigeria. The third type of investment that we'll make is in research and development. And we will work with a range of public and private sector research and development partners to see if we can come up with better vaccines and treatments so that we can both address this outbreak and have tools that would help to prevent and to control future outbreaks on the continent.
I know you're very particular in which development programs you invest. Are there certain therapies or potential vaccines that you're looking at?
Joe, we're really just beginning to make that assessment. We had a couple of our team was in Geneva last week for a review that the World Health Organization convened to look at all of the different therapies and vaccines in the pipeline. And we're at the process of doing the scientific diligence to understand which of those would be the best ones to invest in. And again, we would invest in that together with the NIH and the CDC and the World Health Organization and other supporters of research and development.
Chris Elias is president of global development for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. From Seattle, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
The World Health Organization reports that a localized strain of the Ebola virus in the Democratic Republic of Congo has killed 35 people. Seven of the dead are health workers who are caring for more than 60 people confirmed to be infected. The DRC outbreak is not linked to the strain of Ebola that has swept through West Africa. The Ebola in DRC has been restricted to four villages. A mobile testing lab and a team of specialists has been sent to the area. The UN has launched its own $3.8 million air service in the region to shuttle medical personnel and equipment into affected areas of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Most commercial airlines to the region have been stopped. The WHO and the African Union have asked the airlines to return to regular air service. Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, says Sierra Leone has experienced difficulty collecting the bodies of Ebola patients. MSF says bodies have been left rotting in the streets for days. Presidential advisor Ibrahim Beven Karagbo denies the charge. He says it sometimes takes a day to perform tests on the diseased before they can collect them.
Also, Yahias, the United States has donated five ambulances to help Sierra Leone gather the corpses. U.S. pledges to the health crisis in West Africa have totaled $100 million. The U.K. says it will take 8 weeks to set up a $40 million, 62-bed Ebola treatment center in Sierra Leone. MSF International President Dr. Joanne Liu says international funding is taking too long. Meanwhile, immunologist Dr. Daniel Lucy of the Georgetown University Medical Center in Washington, D.C., says a lack of fuel has created more difficulties in performing speedy testing of those suspected of being infected. Lucy worked in an isolation unit at Connaught Hospital in Freetown. He's preparing to spend another 6 weeks in Liberia, which has lost more than 1,000 people to Ebola. Lucy says the work is difficult and dangerous, but there is so much that even one person can contribute. Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. A first-ever report documenting the extent of illegal deforestation for commercial agriculture use was released today. Forest Trends, a global research NGO, conducted the study. It found that 49% of recent tropical deforestation is the result of illegal clearing for the consumption of beef, leather, palm oil, soy, timber, and other commodities produced in Brazil, Indonesia, and the tropical nations of the Congo Basin. The biggest consumers are the U.S., China, Russia, and the EU. The result of illegal stripping of forest has had a devastating impact on forest-dependent people and on biodiversity. Sam Lawson is an independent researcher and founding director of EarthSight, a research organization. He is currently partnering with Forest Trends and is author of this study. He explained how companies are able to conduct illegal clearing for commercial agriculture.
Most of the companies that are carrying out this illegal conversion have some kind of government permit, but they don't have all government permits, and sometimes those government permits have been issued corruptly in exchange for bribes. They're able to do it because there is insufficient implementation and enforcement by the government in the countries concerned. And they're also able to do it because they're able to sell the products on international markets, which don't exclude these products from international markets.
How then can this be stopped? Because, of course, it does have a devastating effect for the people who depend on the forest for their livelihoods and as well as biodiversity. What can be done to curb this?
Well, there are a range of things that can be done, and actions are needed both by the countries where this is taking place, but also by the governments of countries which import the relevant products. The private sector also has a role to play, but principally this is something that governments need to address. And what's needed is coordinated action by the tropical countries themselves and the major consuming countries. And that action needs to involve regulatory action. So what we've seen with timber over the last 15 years is we've seen countries like Europe and the US pass laws which make it illegal to import and sell timber which was illegally sourced in the country of origin. Now, we need to consider having similar laws regarding some of these agricultural commodities like palm oil and beef. We might also consider in key importing countries having policies which require that all government purchases of these commodities have to be proven to be legal and that certain checks are required by companies that are importing them. Finally, those importing countries also need to work with the producer countries, the tropical forest countries. They need to partner with them to assist them both in terms of technical assistance and financial assistance to help better enforce forest law in these countries.
How has this illegal deforestation affected the people who depend on forest for their livelihoods?
It has a devastating impact. The conversion of the forests themselves will essentially wipe out all of the resources and services those forests provide, including food and shelter and clean water supplies. Essentially, people's land is being stolen illegally by companies. The rights of local people and indigenous people in many of these forested countries are being ignored by these companies, and often their permission is not being obtained when it's legally required to be obtained before these conversion operations take place. And they're not being given the compensation that the law requires when forest is converted. So this is having a devastating impact. And what that is resulting in is large numbers of violent conflict between local people and developers.
You brought up a really important aspect of this deforestation is the conflicts that it is causing. Do you think the international community is really focusing on this issue as it should be?
I think the international community has given more attention to tropical deforestation over the last few years. And part of the reason for that is that people are beginning to realize that the carbon emissions, climate change impact of tropical deforestation is very important. It's somewhere between 12 and 70% of human-induced climate change is being caused by deforestation. So there has been increased attention internationally on tropical deforestation. The problem is that a lot of that increased attention is misplaced. A lot of effort is going into things, will not work in an environment where most of the deforestation is illegal and where there is no control over the commodities that are coming from that illegal deforestation law.
Looking at the study that you all have conducted, what would you like to see happen?
I'd like to see the international community recognize the importance of illegal conversion for these commodities as the most important driver of tropical deforestation and prioritize the tackling that illegality and that lack of good governance as a top priority with regard to tackling tropical deforestation as a whole.
That was Sam Lawson, an independent researcher and founding director of EarthSight, a research organization. He is also the author of the study. He spoke with me from London.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 29 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight, comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. President Barack Obama vows to go after Islamic extremists wherever they exist, including Syria. And French President Francois Hollande heads to Iraq tomorrow to underscore his country's support in crushing the Islamic State. Coming up, we have music from Liberia. And in our feature segment, part four of our series on remarkable enterprises in South Africa. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehias Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Happy Thursday, Sunny.
Happy Thursday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand a Nigerian boxer topped your sports report.
Kim, let's begin with African boxing. Nigeria's Latif Power Kayode fights for the interim WBA heavyweight title later Thursday night when he takes on Cuba's Luis Ortiz in Las Vegas, Nevada. The unbeaten Coyote has won 20 bouts, 16 by knockout, and he recently moved up to the heavyweight ranks from the cruiserweight division. The Cuban Ortiz, meanwhile, is also unbeaten with 21 victories. I asked our reigning prince of pugilistics, Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta, what do the World Boxing Organization organizers mean when they say interim heavyweight title?
Well, interim is when a champion cannot defend his title due to some medical reason or legal issue. The top two contenders will then fight for a title, which means they have the chance and opportunity to fight the champion when the champion is ready to come back and defend his title.
What do you think of Coyote at this stage of his career, Nnamdi? Is he a natural heavyweight?
Thursday night will answer the question of can he come upstairs with the power, because if you're fighting the big boys, you must have power. And here you're fighting a 6'3", top Cuban heavyweight with 360 amateur fight, and it's a southpaw. If you don't have the power, he'll make you look stupid.
The big fight this week, Nnamdi, Saturday night in Las Vegas.
Like I always say, for every fight, everybody had a game plan. As of right now, there's not a blueprint on how to beat Floyd Mayweather. No one has found the way to break the Mayweather code.
Mayweather-Maidana 2 rematch between Floyd Mayweather and Marcos Maidana from Argentina. How's it shaping up, Nnamdi?
Well, it's a very good fight because the first fight was very entertaining. So the question now becomes, will Floyd Mayweather go in and fight for the fans? Remember, the first fight was for the fans. He stood there, he went on the ropes, rope-a-dope, went toe-to-toe. Well, it may not be the same the second time around. And this fight is all about adjustment. Who can adjust?
A lot of talk these days, Nnamdi, that Mayweather might fight the Pac-Man, Manny Pacquiao, in 2015. The Pac-Man also has a fight coming up in November against American Chris Algieri. What do you make of these reports?
Come on, Sonny. You know, these reports always come out when these two guys have fights coming up. You know? They're talking about some rich guy in the Dubai who's ready to put in $300 million for these two guys to fight. They keep teasing us, man. $300 million, bro. I mean, you know, these two guys, I don't think they will fight in 2015. They keep pushing it away. But the fight fans, they're not really interested in these two guys fighting. This fight is 2 years old, you know. This fight should have happened 2 years ago. I mean, Manny Pacquiao should have fought Floyd Mayweather. Now they're talking about two fights in 2015. When it happens, we believe it.
Is the main stumbling block to Pac-Man Mayweather, Nnamdi, the promoters?
The promoters and the greedy entourage around them. The promoters want a big chunk. The fighters want a big chunk. Floyd Mayweather is used to making $32 million minimum for his fight. Will he allow Manny Pacquiao to make that kind of money? So it's greed and a bunch of con men around these guys looking out for themselves only.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moweta. And we'll hear more verbal jabs from Namdi during Friday's Sunny Side of Sports.
Galala! Great show, bro.
Hi, I'm Shegwadi Emin, coming to you all the way from Lagos, Nigeria. Weekends are for sports. Nightline Africa Sports, that is. And every Sunday, I'll give you highlights of the top sports stories of the past week and the weekend. Nightline Africa Sports from the Voice of America. Let the games begin.
We got the game on. This is for the world. Just come out and play with me.
This is for the globe.
Just come out and play with me.
This is for the world.
Just come out and play with me.
This is for the globe.
This is for the world. Just come out and play with me.
This is for the globe.
Just come out and play with me.
This is for the world.
Just come out and play with me.
This is for the globe.
We got the game on.
Game on, sports fans. There were 14 games Wednesday in the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying competition as teams continued their battles on the pitch in a bid to make it to next year's football fiesta in Morocco. The indomitable Lions of Cameroon had a disappointing performance at this year's World Cup in Brazil, where they lost all three of their matches and finished with the lowest ranking of the 32 teams. In the wake of that dismal outing, Cameroon's German coach Volker Finke dropped team captain and four-time African Footballer of the Year Samuel Eto'o from his squad. And after that, Eto'o quickly announced his retirement from Cameroon's national team. Well, without Eto'o, the indomitable Lions look like they might be getting their roar back. Playing at home in Yaoundé Wednesday, the indomitable Lions posted one of the most impressive victories in Nations Cup qualifying, as we hear now from our Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma.
Cameroon's indomitable Lions were in scintillating form when they clawed the elephants of Ivory Coast 4-1 in Yaoundé on Wednesday, while the Democratic Republic of Congo beat Sierra Leone 2-0 in Lubumbashi. In the other Group D fixture, Cameroon lead the group with 6 points. The Congolese edge Ivory Coast on goal average to place second, while Sierra Leone is at the bottom of the table. In Group A, Republic of Congo beat visitors Sudan 2-0 in Pointe Noire, as African champions Nigeria and host South Africa play to a scoreless draw in Cape Town. Consequently, the Congolese top the group with maximum 6 points. South Africa is second ahead of Nigeria, then come Sudan. Meanwhile, hosts Algeria consolidated their lead in Group B with a 1-0 win over Mali in Blida, while Malawi pipped visitors Ethiopia 3-2 in Blantyre. Algeria has 6 points. Mali edge Malawi on goal difference to claim second spot, while Ethiopia is at the bottom of the table. In Group C, Burkina Faso outclassed their Angolan hosts 3-0 in Luanda, as Gabon held Lesotho to a 1-1 draw in Maseru. Burkina Faso lead the group with 6 points. Gabon is second. Lesotho is third, followed by Angola. Elsewhere, Cape Verde Islands beat Zambia 2-0 in Praia, as Mozambique and Niger drew 1-1 in Maputo. Cape Verde topped the group with 6 points. Mozambique is second, followed by Niger, then Zambia. In Group E, Uganda beat Guinea 2-0 in Kampala, as Ghana edged Togo 3-2 in Lome. Uganda edged Ghana on goal average to top the group with 4 points. Guinea is third ahead of Togo. Meanwhile, the resurgent Senegal Lions of Teranga continue their winning form with a 2-0 triumph over hosts Botswana and Gaborone, while Egypt's woes persist after Tunisia pipped them by a solitary goal in their Cairo backyard. Senegal edged Tunisia on goal difference to top the group with 6 points. Botswana is above bottom-placed Egypt on account of goal difference. Finally, Nations Cup hosts Morocco played to a scoreless draw against visitors Qatar in a friendly match in Casablanca.
The best footballers must have dedication and teamwork. And to end malaria, we need this same unity. Malaria stops footballers from scoring and children from learning. Join with footballer Didier Drogba.
Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Join with leaders like President Museveni.
United, we can beat malaria.
Oh,
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's go to Barcelona, Spain, where the first semifinal tips off later Thursday night at the FIBA Basketball World Cup. Lithuania will play the defending world and Olympic champion United States. The Americans advance to the Final Four with an easy 119-76 victory over Slovenia, while Lithuania beat Turkey 73-61. Houston Rockets star James Harden scored 14 points against Slovenia. James, what are your expectations for tonight's semifinal against Lithuania?
Our expectations are the same as every game. You know, make sure we compete, play for, you know, each other. Offensively move the ball, make sure we make the extra pass, and then defensively help each other out. But Lithuania is a very good team. You know, they have very good guards. Obviously, their two big men are tremendous, you know, Valančiūnas and Demo. So, you know, it's going to be a big-time game for us. Our guards got to help our bigs out. Like I said, their bigs are very good. So we got to do a great job of pressuring the basketball, you know, making sure that, you know, we stay have intensity for 40 minutes.
James Harden of the USA men's basketball team, the Americans going for gold in Spain. The other semifinal at the FIBA Basketball World Cup will be played Thursday in Madrid, Spain, where France will face Serbia. The French upset host Spain 65-52 on Wednesday in front of stunned fans in Madrid. After dominating their first six games and blowing out the French by 24 points in the group phase, Spain appeared to be the main candidate to dethrone the USA in a possible final that would have been a rematch of the past two Olympic gold medal games. But the French defended well and rebounded even better to pull off the upset. And let's give a Sunny Side of Sports shout-out for Boris Diaw of the reigning NBA champion San Antonio Spurs. Boris scored 15 points for the French, and Diaw now has the unique opportunity of being, get this, basketball fans, an NBA champion, a European champion, and a world champion should the French go on and win Sunday's final in Madrid. I think the USA might have something to say about that, though. Going with the Americans all the way. And the French first have to get past the Serbians on Thursday. Serbia reached the semifinals by beating Brazil 84-56. Semifinal action at the FIBA Basketball World Cup in Spain. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yehiz Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Okay, thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Coming up, part four of our Remarkable Enterprises in South Africa series. And next, the newest party in South Africa's parliament threatened with a two-week suspension. But first, some music. Here is Jahwe of Liberia with Joy and Pain.
Joy or pain, tell me which to die. Tell me everything will be all right. Everything will be okay. I must know what's the mood today, so I know what to expect, preventing any future fights. I saw you on the holiday, your attitude was fine right then. Music in the atmosphere, people dancing everywhere. The festive crowd was all around, you started to get your boogie down. We're looking good and crazy fine. Girl, you really blew my mind. Chilling, kicking back, and it was cool.
Baby, it was cool.
Then 2 hours later, you lost your cool.
Why you lost your cool?
Started screaming at the water bar. Over what was all your fault? Well, I have to go through this every time.
Joy or pain.